tape.
No.
So we can play it quicker.
But I am recording.
Okay. Good morning, staff, members of the board, and the public. Want to welcome you to the regular meeting, July 13th, 2005, of the Napomo Community Services District. And please join me in the flag salute. Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Secretary, would you call the roll, please?
Director Percy.
Here.
Director Trotter. Director Wynn.
Here.
Director Eby.
Here.
President Grohmeyer.
Here. Thank you very much. At this time, I'd like to open it to public comment. We'll wait till everybody is seated. At this time, I'd like to open it to public comment for any comments for items that are not on the agenda but are under the purview of the district, and would like to limit comments to roughly 3 minutes. Anybody have a comment on items not on the agenda but within the purview?
I don't know what the items are on the agenda. Okay. I'm here to complain about this contract you're coming up with, a mandatory garbage pickup.
Okay, well, that's not on the agenda, so we do have copies of the agenda at the back of the room, but if you would like to come up to the podium, state your name, and tell us.
Well, look, the contract, the way I read it,
you need to stand up.
I'm handicapped. I'd like to sit.
Okay. We'll see what we
can see. Me.
Yeah.
Since I'm steamed about this contract.
Okay.
Open end. My money is $2,000 a government cost of living, and this contract guarantees somebody a profit to begin with. This is not going to create less garbage. It's going to create more garbage. It's not stopping the refrigerators or sofas or whatever stuff you're talking about. I'm a single senior citizen. My neighbors maybe need the garbage pickup more than I do with a large family. I'm subsidizing them when you force me to do this. In different areas where I lived before, it was the same thing. They come over and fill up my garbage thing. I'm subsidizing them, just like the schools. This guaranteed contract, will you guarantee that they won't raise the rates more than 2% or whatever the cost of living is? That's not in there, that's the way I read it. He's open ended contract and he's guaranteed a profit. There's not many contracts these days that work that way. There's some big public things like that where they show how much waste it is, where they buy new equipment, grinders and all that stuff on an Arizona power plant for one thing, and they just waste the stuff, buy new stuff when they go to a different site. This is the kind of contract that is to begin with. There's nothing that says they can't raise the rate more than 2% or whatever the cost of living is to begin with. That should be in there. I'm subsidizing the schools and a lot of other things that I won't use. And I'd like the people that need a service to buy the service. If you don't need the service, you don't buy it. You know, it's like anything else. This is getting out of whack.
Okay, for the record, we need your name.
Yes,
Will
would you?
Hartman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hartman.
Sir, I could just respond briefly.
Mr. Seitz, please.
Yeah, thank you. You raised some comments that, of course, concern every public agency. But when we took over solid waste, we were obligated to assume the current franchise agreement. That's how it works through the LAFCO process and under the public resource code that relates to solid waste. The board will consider the opportunity of other contract methods when this franchise agreement runs its course. However, I do want to make a couple comments as to some of the substantive things. One is solid waste service is subject to regulatory demands. And when those regulations change, you can't have a 2% or some type of limitation on raises because they are constantly addressing new regulatory demands that, of course, increase rates for everybody. That's just the nature of solid waste service. Now, that's regulated by the state of California, not this district or any local agency. However, there is a profit limitation built into the contracts. And that profit limitation is a result of negotiations countywide. I don't have the exact formula here. I don't have the contract here. But you make a point. The franchisee is guaranteed a profit. So I think that's a fair comment. There is a cost of living in the contract itself that we honor. But when regulatory demands come up, for example, these new workman compensation laws come up where the franchisee wants to get away from the issues of picking up garbage that are going to this modern solid waste service where the arm comes out, picks up the can. That actually, even though the cost of the equipment is a little more expensive, he would pass this on, those workman comp claims onto his clients as a cost of doing business. So I want to just make sure everybody understands, we regulate those contracts, we watch them, we meet and confer. The special districts are on the Integrated Waste Management Authority, so there are checks and balances involved in these contract negotiations, and they're probably not perfect, but it's the best we can do. And I just got to say that the contract that we have with our solid waste provider is one that we assumed when we took over solid waste, and it is consistent with the other contracts throughout the county because they're almost modeled exactly the same.
Well, I also object to that 10% slush fund or whatever it is that you're getting back from it, and I also object to the part where 2.5 acres or more are excluded, and also the part where there's no more burning. A lot of things are changing out here, and they're not changing for me, they're against me. All the people that are coming out of here, and the builders and developers coming out of here, because they can build out here cheap, and then they're gone after they make their profits. All these new homes and developments right here don't do me any good. It's all cost me more all the time. Cost of school goes up, cost of all this other stuff goes up. This here burning ordinance, I'm in the area and somebody 2 blocks away can burn, or 3 blocks. The state is burning land right now. The firefighters just burned the house down for training. You know, in one area a few blocks away you can burn, and then now you change it so in my area you can't burn again. So this creates more of a waste problem for me, but the whole thing is bad, the whole legislation as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I can't speak for the California legislature, but let me just make a quick comment. Under the old franchise agreement, when the county had the franchise, that 10% went to the county. That 10% that you're talking about now, the franchise fee, goes to the district. So that money is re-spent in the district, and it can only be spent for community cleanup and other solid waste-related matters. Additionally, I just want to point out that the district actually decreased the franchise fee in order to purchase the solid waste containers. You see an example back there. So when we went to this last ordinance, you wouldn't see an increase in your fees related to the new solid waste containers. We actually reduced the franchise fee, or paid that out of the franchise fund. I'm not going to call it a slush fund, to pay for those things. So I just want to make sure that everybody understands that 10% in there can be used for a variety of things, including reducing costs and purchasing equipment for our residents in order to maintain what we believe to be an equitable solid waste fee.
And also initiate periodic street sweeping.
Right.
Well, that's, the downtown that's something area. That I don't want. The businesses want that, the conference wants it, whoever wants that, to pay for that service. Mainly it's the businesses that want the tourists to come in and spend their money here and take off, and they probably make more of the necessary cleanup and the waste of trash along the road than anybody else. I moved out in a rural area here because I liked it. And now it's changing. It's changing just like Santa Maria. You know, it's all the businesses and stuff who want more people coming in. Doesn't do me any good. Just more traffic, more cost, and everything else.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your comments this morning. Mrs. Worsing.
Yes, and your name again, please?
Well, Hartman.
Hartman, Mr. Hartman. I want the public to know, which has not been publicly stated, that I was the only person who voted against the mandatory trash, only because I felt that it would hurt seniors that shared containers or whatever, because they don't generate very much trash. And I just want it to be publicly known that I agree with some of your complaints there, because I feel that we live in a rural community, and if we want to live in big city, that's where you have the mandatory. But that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mrs. Worsing. Any other public comment for items not on the agenda but under the district's purview? Seeing none, we'll then go to Battalion Chief Dan Anderson from CDF.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the board, members of the public, Dan Anderson, California Department of Forestry. Well, I just kind of wanted to briefly touch on some of our statistical information. During the month of June, we responded out of Station 20 to 96 calls, most of them being medical aids, over 50% of them. Out of our Mesa station, 43 calls. Several fires in the area we've had lately, starting to get our vegetation fires. We had one out on Highway 101, one out on Los Barrios here the other night. We're involved in a search that you probably heard on the news last night, where they thought somebody had jumped off the bridge on 166. Turned out they did not, and it everything worked out, but we were quite involved in that for the time out there. 4th of July was fairly quiet for us. We had several enforcement actions we took in this area. Over the holiday weekend, we had 6 fireworks-related fires. All of the fireworks-related fires were due to safe and sane. The citations were for illegal. With that, any questions?
Any questions?
Oh, I did have one. Does the Mesa station go help when they have a call in Grover Beach and stuff? Do they?
We currently have what we call a 5 cities auto aid agreement, which all the cities, Rio Grande, Grover, Pismo, Oceano, and ourselves have all entered into a agreement where we will all coordinate our efforts. And we went through a study about a year and a half ago where we figured out which engines out of which agency were closest, down to about the 4th engine out. We regularly participate in that, and we send engines routinely into Oceano and Grover. Grover, not too much. What we do is we tend to go and cover behind the law them when they're committed, but we do participate in that.
There was some kind of an emergency or something on Halcyon, and I mean, you couldn't see anything, but all these fire trucks came. It was like three big engines.
Yeah, most likely three, yeah, right.
And the one coming from Mesa, I assumed, but I thought it was kind of, you know, like we couldn't see anything, so, but it was like everybody came.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was interesting, or you know, I was curious. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions of Battalion Chief Anderson. Any questions from the public for Battalion Chief Anderson? Okay. Seeing none, then thank you very much for your report. Stay safe. Okay, then moving to the consent agenda, we have the warrants and then two sets of board meeting minutes. Any corrections, comments on?
I move approval.
Okay, we have a move by Mr. Wynn to approve the consent agenda, a second by Mr. Eby. Madam Secretary, would you call for the vote, please?
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Worthy?
Yes.
President Verheyen?
Yes. Thank you. Item E1. Fee consideration for tract 2561 Brooks Burnset. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. Just a brief overview of the staff report and the request being made. This we received a letter from Dr. Brooks Burnset on June 7th requesting that the board consider making water and sewer fees for Track 2561 retroactive prior to April 13, 2005. And again, that request is attached to your staff report. The basis for this request is that Mr. Burnset was, he states he's prepared to pay his fees in the fall, was told he couldn't pay his fees until his plans were approved by the county. Best staff can recollect on that would be that Mr. Burnset was probably directed that he couldn't pay his fees until his plans, his development plans, were approved by the district, and that it can often be a case where the utilities portion of the plans is prepared and ready to go, and the county approval may be pending. But typically those approvals do come fairly close together, and I believe our standards and specifications actually call for the developer to receive the county approval first and then our utilities approval. But in any event, Mr. Burnset also makes this request based on the fact that he did not directly receive the intent to serve letter. His agent received the intent to serve letter, and as I point out again in the staff report, this is standard procedure. When an owner of a project, on the application, we list the owner and we list the agent, and typically the correspondence is done directly with the agent unless requested otherwise, and it was not in this case. We are talking about a substantial fee difference, as I think the directors are quite aware of, and I've summarized here. I think what we're looking for today is to hear some testimony from Mr. Burnset or his representative, it appears in this case, and then allow staff, counsel specifically, to take in that testimony, and depending on what's heard, if depending on the argument, probably suggest then that staff come back with a recommendation for the board at a future meeting based on the testimony here today. If any questions I might answer at this time, I'd suggest that we hear from the developer.
Any comments, questions from the board or staff? If not at this time, then is Mr. Crawford here?
Mr. Knutson.
Okay. And
my name is Paul Knutson. I'm with Accord Engineering. Brooks could not make it today, so he asked me to stand in for him. He was called out of town. Brooks' basic contention is, as Mr. LeBrun stated, he never received the letter of the intent to serve that was sent to an engineer that started working on the project. We are now the engineer of record on his project, and I was not involved at that time. He basically is requesting that the fees be that his fees be retroactive to the previous fees. based on the fact that he did not receive the letter, and he, had he received the letter, he would have come in and paid the fees in time.
Any questions?
Yes, I have a question. You are, again, what's your name?
Kim.
Oh, go ahead.
Judith was,
go ahead.
Sorry.
Just beat you up just a little bit.
Is it customary for an engineering firm that's in charge of the project to receive such letters?
Well, it is, because it is customary. Typically, from most municipalities we get, or jurisdictions, we get letters sent to the owners as well. And typically,
so
the owners are responsible ultimately for paying those fees. So,
it is
my opinion. I'm not saying it's not your standard practice to just send it to the owner, but in my opinion, it should be sent to the owner, because they're the ones responsible for paying the fee, not the engineer.
Right. So, then the engineer should have forwarded that to Dr. Bernstein.
He should have. For the record, I do not know this engineer, the original engineer. I've not seen any of the work that he provided Dr. Bernstein on this project.
Jim Crawford.
It appears to have been minimal, maybe limited to just filling out the application to this district. I'm not sure.
Thank you. That was my question.
Okay. Mr. Eby.
What was your name again?
My name is Paul Knutson.
And you are a?
I'm the principal engineer at Accord Engineering. And we are currently working on this project.
And you are his agent now?
I'm the engineer of record. I've not signed as his agent. He requested that I come and explain.
Do you have a written agreement with him that you are his agent?
I have a written contract with him. I am not his agent.
You have a written contract with him that you can represent him?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know if the previous, if his previous agent had a similar written contract?
I have no idea. As I stated, I don't even know the engineer personally.
Do you, in your capacity, do you give him a written report, or what sort of, how does he know what you've done here today?
Yes, we'll notify him in writing.
I noticed that his complaint was that he wasn't personally sent the intent to serve letter, however, his agent was, and I just wondered.
Yeah, once again, I don't know who that was.
Do you think it's a responsibility of the NCSD to keep track of the people's agents to see who the current agents are? I mean, if you disappear tomorrow, are we remiss if we don't track you down and find out whether you're the current agent or not?
Well, you're asking for my opinion. My
yes.
opinion would be that the NCSD should notify the owner as well as any agent, so that you wouldn't have to worry if there would be no confusion if for some reason he changed his representation.
Okay.
But that's my opinion.
That's all I have.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I have questions of legal counsel.
Mr. Knutson? Mr. Seitz?
Basically, Mr. Seitz, my question would be, I noticed that the agent is the one who signed the intent to serve letter, not the owner. And
the application?
The application. And we sent notification to him. When somebody becomes an agent, and do we have responsibility to maintain dual or more than dual communications? How does that work?
Well, I want to reserve, of course, my final comments after public testimony. But the principles of agency are this. The agent stands for the principal. Hmm. So, quite frankly, I mean, I understand the argument, but we, along with most other local agencies, accept an engineer's statement that he is the principal for the agent. you know, I think the law is pretty clear that the agent actually is the principal when they sign on agreement. So whatever liabilities the agent enters into on behalf of the principal, it becomes the principal's responsibility to fulfill.
In other words, the application here that's signed by the agent is a valid application, even though it doesn't have the owner's name on it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, what I don't hear is the applicant saying reissue the intent to serve letter. I mean, if that's, and I don't believe that that's the applicant's position, is that this intent, this application is no good, the intent to serve letter is no good. You know, we need to refund his $50 and start anew. That's not the argument that I'm hearing. Now, I'm not saying that that argument can't be made, but it seems to me that what they're saying is we want you to honor the, we recognize the intent to serve letter. So, you know, I don't want to go much further than that, but I don't think they've raised the issue that the intent to serve letter, that the application is defective, therefore the intent to serve letter is defective and we should be allowed to reapply for the intent to serve letter. I don't hear that argument.
Okay. No.
If I may, President.
Mr. LeBrun.
I didn't cover this explicitly, but our record does not show a written notice to the district of a change of agent or responsible party for this project. We never received such a notification. Mr. Crawford did represent the project in front of the board on multiple occasions prior to final approval.
Yeah.
Our record does show that. So Mr. Crawford did do quite a bit of work, at least at the front end of this project, for the owner, Dr. Burnsets.
And there may be other public testimony out here too, so I think we would want to.
Yeah, is there other public comment on this item?
Once again, board members, I would like to just address the fact that we're not disputing anything that's written, or I should say Brooks is not disputing anything that is written in the letter of intent or with the application. I think the issue is just the timeline, the fact that he feels he could have paid the fees in time, and because he did not receive notification, obviously he could not pay the fees. And so he's asking that the old fees be reinstated for his project.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Knudsen. Any other comments from the board?
Well, I thought
we'll bring it back to the board. I, seeing no other public comment, I'll bring it back to the board. Okay, Mr. Eby.
I thought we were supposed to rule on this today, but from what I hear is that the staff would like to take the facts that were presented today and put it into a form that we can, a more formal form that we can vote on. So I think what you'd like to hear is that we table this or direct the staff to present a case to us.
Right. Well, I think here's the
present your recommendation.
You know, in essence, you're sitting in your quasi-judicial capacity when you're ruling on applications like this. And I think it's always important for a board for us to take this down and to make findings, and then that you would adopt a resolution with those findings. You know, to make it clear to the applicant and to the public as precisely the reason why you're denying the application. So our recommendation would be to direct staff to make findings and to come back with a recommendation to the board for approval.
I move that we direct staff to make findings and come back with a recommendation at another meeting for the board for approval.
But now, findings in support of what conclusion?
In support of whatever conclusion the staff recommends.
Well, I think the board can if they want, they can instruct the board to come back with findings supporting one resolution or another, if that's what the board desires, or they can just instruct the board council to come back with findings, and then you would hear this thing de novo again, so to speak. So it could be, if you wanted to support it, you say, staff, we direct you to come back with a resolution with findings supporting the request for denial or for approval. Mrs. Worsley.
Thank you. Has anything like this come before staff before, such as this, in
sure.
the past?
Sure. And I think that although I understand the applicant's concern, and I take him at his word that the actual applicant wasn't aware of the terms and conditions of the intent to serve letter, and there may have been communications lacking between the engineer and the applicant. I just don't think it personally that that's this board's responsibility to be involved in those those communications, or to ferret them out to make sure that there's a good stream of communication between the engineer and the and his principal. I'd also point out that although I'm not routinely involved in relationships with engineers, I am familiar with projects when the engineer actually changes, the district is notified, of a change in engine, that the engineer has changed. I've seen those across my desk on a number of occasions.
Well, Mr. Crawford came before our board a number of times and talked about this. My concern is that even though there's an increase in rates, this is an increase that all developers are currently paying. And for us to forgive him because communication slipped between him and his engineer, all it does is takes those real costs and puts them on the back of everybody else. I don't see how we can do that. Even though I appreciate staff's desire to come back with findings and everything, which I certainly think is a good process, I would hope personally that it would be in support of denying the appeal.
Okay, I'll change my motion to a recommendation that the staff come back with a resolution supporting denial of the appeal.
Second.
Okay, and I would also like staff to look in our procedures for intent to serve letter issuance with thought that possibly making sure that not only the applicant or the agent, in this case the agent was the applicant, since he signed the intent to serve letter request, that a copy also be sent to the property owner, and that possibly a very simple flowchart showing the process of how to get your plans checked by the district and pay your fees at that time, what's the process you have to go through, that which would then be attached to the intent to serve letter that goes to the owner as well as the agent, if there is an agent. In this case, crystal clear that big bold letters on the front page, don't forget to look at this flow chart. This is what you got to do to get your fees paid, because if you don't get them, you may be hit with further fees.
I would not support that. Well, I hope that's not part of the motion.
No, I'm just saying I think that they need to explore this as part of our procedure for the district.
As this board well knows, we have other applicants who have had a multitude of engineers and attorneys and other such things, and we have to make sure that legally we communicate with the agent of record.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, we've been told verbally or even in letters, well, so-and-so is now my new engineer, or so-and-so is now my new lawyer. And they had no contractual relationship, and we end up sending stuff to the wrong people, and then we're getting conflicting answers from those two. So I think we need to stay where the law protects us, and that is that we stick with the agent that they identify. If the owner says, I'm going to be the contact person, then so be it. He's his own primary agent. If he appoints an attorney or an engineer or whoever as his agent, then I think that's the person we have to do it with. But if staff starts sending, have to send two, and then on principle, three.
No, I'm just saying you send a copy to the owner and to the agent that is noted on the application. When they change, then that's up to the owner to so make note. But hopefully that paperwork just gets passed along. I don't see us sending out letter, or copy after copy. I'm just saying, in this case, or I think maybe in all cases, you know, it's an extra 37 cents, or maybe a little more. You send a copy to the owner and a copy to the agent on the application. One time. Two items get. One gets handed to the agent, the other gets sent to the owner, unless the owner is the agent also.
Okay, if that's part of the motion,
it's not, no. Okay. No, it's not part of the motion. I'm just saying that this may be something that we could look into the process of issuing our intent to serve letters.
The
flow chart and a possibly, if the owner's not the agent, then we send a copy to the owner.
The part of your recommendation that I picked up on that I think is a good idea is the flowchart part. I mean, you have in the past, people were confused about annexations, what the process is. You've provided a flowchart for annexation, and I think for other things like this, it would be helpful to have a flowchart for this process too.
The flowchart thing is a good idea.
Yeah, I think. Yeah.
But sending multiple copies, I won't support. Now, staff can come back and tell us what's involved in deciding to do that. But all I know is that sometimes there's more than one owner, as well as more than one agent. And then further, they can all send correspondence back to us, which may or may not be in conflict with themselves.
That's true.
And then where are we? Whereas if we stick with one, we always know exactly what we're responsible for. And staff has a clear response. Now, if they have internal disagreements, they have to work it out on their own. But the minute we start sending copies to all of the owners and copies to all of the partners and copies to all of the agents, I think it starts off with it multiplies.
I'm hoping that would be something that staff would look at is this even feasible? Where there are multiple owners or multiple partnerships or whatever, when you have a individual, it's a little easier. It may apply in that instance, but not in other instances. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out. I didn't want to drag it out too long. So we have a first, we have a motion and a second. Madam Secretary, would you call for the vote, please?
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Worsley?
Yes, and I have one comment. I think that Dr. Burnsett should really confer with the other engineers and possibly hold them responsible for this terrible error.
The other engineer, if I
make
one little comment, I don't think he actually did any engineering. I think he just tracked that.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you very much for that. Moving on to item number E2 is our CSDA board nomination. Nominate a director or senior staff person to run for open election for appointment to the CSDA board.
This is the state board, right?
Yeah, this is a state board. They meet every other month up in Sacramento. So Mr. LeBrun, would you like to introduce this, or should we just go for it?
Well, I think your introduction is just about complete. I wanted to put it on the agenda and make sure that if any director was so inclined that we had the opportunity to consider that director, or that the entire board had the opportunity to consider that director and make that nomination. So that's why this item's here. I did not hear from any of the directors that they were interested, but I thought I'd make sure we put it on the agenda.
You still haven't heard from me.
And you won't. And that's fine.
Any interest by any of the, Mr. Wynn?
No, thank you.
Mr. Eby? Mrs. Worsing?
No, thank you.
Mr. Verheiley? No.
Okay. We suspect Mr. Blair did.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Blair was on the stage.
Mind you, if we had, if any one of you were able to go up to Sacramento on a regular basis and get involved in that process, I think it would be good for Napomo.
I think it would
but
be, too.
I just know that I can't get away on that kind of basis.
And time-wise, it's...
Yeah.
I haven't mown my lawn in over a month.
I know.
Thank you for that comment, Mr. Eby. Okay. Well, with that, then we will adjourn to the Napomo Community Services District Public Facilities Corporation. Madam Secretary, could you call the roll, please?
Director Worsley?
Yes.
Director Trotter? Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes, but I have a question. Am I really a member? Don't you have to sign up or swear or something? Did I just become a member? It's like birth. You don't have anything to say about it?
No.
Thank you, Mrs. Okay.
President.
Yes, here. Okay. On this, then, I will... We'll open it up to public comment for any comments regarding the Napomo Community Services District Public Facilities Corporation, of which this board also serves as a board member for that. Okay, seeing no public comment, we'll bring it back to the board and...
Mr. President, the only item that's on your Public Facilities Corporation agenda is the approval of the minutes of your last board meeting, and they're attached.
Right. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
And I thought maybe it might make sense for at least the new director and for the new general manager that Mr. Seitz give a brief overview as to what this process is all about and why we go through it.
That's what I was going to suggest.
Okay. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Howard. I also.
The district, some years ago, hired consultants to take a look at some revenue bond financing, where we would pledge our property taxes and apparently other revenues in order to sell bonds on the market, and we have done that. In order to form the appropriate legal mechanism in order to do that, our consultants recommended that we form a public facilities corporation, which we're authorized to do by law. We're not plowing new ground when we did that. So the corporation is actually the same board members of the board are the same board members of the corporation. And once a year, we're obligated to conduct a meeting. And the only item that you have on this meeting's agenda for your yearly meeting is the approval of the minutes of your last board meeting. That's about all I know. I wasn't prepared to go through the bylaws or any of the intricacies of the corporation when I came here today, but that's basically where we are. This was the financing corporation in order for us to sell bonds, which we have done. And I think, how much money do we have in the bond fund? Do you have an idea?
The last update, and actually President Verheilig asked me about this before the meeting, but I believe our last update on the certificates of participation, our bonds, was a $1.2 million balance remaining that we have earmarked toward our supplemental water pipeline. We have not taken any money out of that since the last update, but I can we'll make sure when you know, our assistant administrator is on vacation this week, but at our next meeting, we'll be able to provide an update of those funds. But there haven't been any changes substantially. The question I had, and maybe Mr. Seitz can help us, is just understand that the financial consultants recommended the corporation. What's the basic effect or purpose of the corporation? Is there something about protecting the district?
Yeah, it was the recommended, going to use these words, that medium in order which to facilitate the sale of certificates of participation was to form a public facilities corporation, which we're allowed to do, and then we act as the board of directors to that, and the public facilities corporation actually sells the bonds or negotiates, gets the certificates of deposit, we get the cash back. The obligation is the Public Facilities Corporation. Now, I don't think that this protects the district going through this process from any liability or exposure. I don't think that's the case. I think that they were looking through an appropriate mechanism under which they could sell these certificates of participation. And they advised us the best mechanism would be to form this corporation in order to sell it. But for all practical matters, it's the money is the district's money. It's not the, the facilities corporation can't go out and buy a Cadillac or anything else. It's just a matter of under our bylaws and our articles of incorporation, we actually had certain projects that we dedicated these revenue district projects that we dedicated these revenues towards. And again, I'm not prepared to go on at length because I'm quite frankly I'm just not prepared to do it.
Well, I think if you look at your adopted FY05-06 budget, one of the items in there is the certificates of participation. I think we have a little over 1.2 million, but that money was used to construct the pipeline across the park between Osage and Taft, in between Osage and Pomeroy, and it's been used for quite a few things. Upgrade of the pipeline on Taft Street here, so on and so forth. There's been quite a few projects, I can't remember them all, but that have been done with that money. So the proposed, the minutes, we need a motion to accept.
I have a question about it just before we approve it, if it's okay. I noticed that in addition to making funding decisions, which was the purpose of this, that we tabled the decision to upgrade the SCADA system as a corporation. Is that correct?
No, you're looking at E3 on that agenda?
Yes.
No, if you take a look at the box.
It's only within the box that we're approving.
Yeah, it's only, gotcha. within the box.
I didn't understand why we would be doing that at that time. It makes sense.
Yeah. One of the other projects was the added storage tank, the 1 million storage tank up on Foothill. Down a Foothill Road, so on and so forth. So the money has been spent on projects that have benefited the district. Oh, yeah. I have, in that the water pressure at my house is instead of being usually 125 PSI at this time of year, is more in the 90 PSI range. Hmm. I don't know if you've noticed it at your house, but boy, that sure is much better.
Blow everybody away.
So then we would need a motion to accept the minutes.
Accept the minutes of the last meeting.
Of the last meeting.
Mm-hmm. I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Eby, a second by Mrs. Worsing. Madam Secretary, could you call for the vote, please?
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Worsing?
Yes.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, with that then, we will adjourn to the Napomo Community Services District regular meeting with the manager's report, Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. As you see, I do not have a written manager's report in front of you today. I will highlight numerous activities over the past 3 weeks that have occurred within the district. I want to bring your attention to supplemental items that provided for you today. One is a copy of County Board of County Staff John Hand's staff report for dated July 19, 2005, and this is his update on the subject line being water supply in the Napomo Mesa area. So that's provided to you for information, and again, that will be in front of the Board of Supervisors on July 19th. This is, the subject is, as we typically call it, is a supplemental water planning standard for the South County inland planning area. And so that's just an update that county staff's providing the board. I've also provided as a supplemental item an example letter that we've been sending out on the solid waste issue. That actually has continued to demand quite a bit of staff's time, as there was an editorial 2 weeks ago this Friday that ran in the Adobe Press regarding the proposed solid waste actions. The editorial carried forward some misconceptions that the reader had after reading our notice. Staff has followed that up with a response, not so much a response, but an attempt to clarify a letter to the Adobe Press that they carried as a commentary on last Friday's Adobe. And in the meantime, we've received quite a number of written protests from the original Adobe article, and in response to that, we've developed this letter that we continue to send to those who have made a written protest. As a result, we've had I think probably on the order of 5 retractions to date. Folks who have basically taken up my offer at the end of this letter, saying, If you'd like to respond to this, actually, I guess I make that this offer in the second paragraph, where after they've read our explanation here, if they'd like to respond, retract their protest, they can do so via email. I've received a number of those, and we're recording those and then pulling those protests back. Staff continues to receive calls on a daily basis, emails on a daily basis. And we respond to those as they come in. For the most part, then, given clarification, we feel like we're hearing a positive response to our proposed actions.
Regarding your letter, is this the letter? This letter you send out to anybody who protests, or
we've sent this out. We had anybody who's protesting on basically on a misinterpretation of what our proposal is. We have had some protests where folks are quite clear of the reasons they do not agree with our proposed actions, and in those cases you know, if they simply don't like the mandatory aspect, or but it's really where folks had this misconception that the rates were additive for each bin. That's been the standard misconception, and that they're reading this to say they have to take at a minimum a 32-gallon garbage and 64-gallon recycle and 96-gallon green waste, and then they add those numbers up off of the chart that really only applies to the garbage wheeler, and come to the conclusion that our proposal is to raise rates by some 300%. And so it's those folks that we're making sure receive this letter.
Okay, just for the benefit of Mr. Hartman, who's here today, there are, you do mention a future date of where this is going to be taken up again, August 10th. Can you tell us what the dates are that, and the milestones that happen before this becomes effective, such as the August 10th date? And
right. The August 10th, this is pursuant to the California Constitution as amended by Proposition 218. Because the proposal is a mandatory solid waste collection, we believe, and I opine, that this is a matter that uniquely affects property ownership and real property. So we're going through the Prop 218 procedures, and on August 18th, we will conduct what we call a protest hearing. And if a majority of the landowners protest the proposed mandatory solid waste fees, then of course we will not be adopting that fee structure, and that fee structure will not support mandatory solid waste. So the nuts and bolts of it is the community will be given an opportunity to express their views one way or the other, but the test of that protest is 50% or more of the landowners within the district.
You said August 18th, this letter
I'm
says
sorry,
August 10th.
10th. I'm sorry.
August 10th.
August 10th. Okay, yeah, I was going to say that's after the adoption, so that doesn't jive.
And can you tell me, then, can we receive this protest today as an official protest and file this and then record it?
Well, it depends. The answer, I don't want to second guess, but it's a property owner protest.
Mm-hmm. And we verified. I spoke with Mr. Hartman on the phone yesterday, and he is indeed a property owner and customer of the district.
Do you want to register your comments as a protest?
Yes.
Very good. Answer is yes.
So far, do you know how many protests have come in?
I'd say it's on the order of 30, 30 at this time. You know, we're seeing confirmation.
I don't understand your vote here. People need the garbage service, and somebody else is going to help pay for it to keep the cost down. Of course, they're not going to vote against it. No. People that have it, I'm sure, aren't going to vote against it. If somebody else, if you're going to have more people paying for it, they're not going to vote against it. It's really a vote for the landowners. I'm just questioning. The other thing is that this 2.5 acre, if you've got 2.5 acres or more, I'm saying, well, get it down to an acre then. Get it down to some other exemptions then too. You know, it's like, I don't understand the vote, because I'm sure there is other people that are against it that aren't here and probably aren't going to speak up against it. But there are other people against it. I don't know if they're going to write in or call in or not, but I know there's other people against it. And I thought some were going to be here, but apparently most of them are working or whatever, different reasons. Yes, I appreciate it. Put me down as a vote against it.
Okay, well, thank you very much for sharing your comments with us.
Continue with my manager's report then. On service requests, there have been no allocations since our last update. There are two small projects that would be at the manager's level of review that I'm considering, but those have been pending on my desk for about a month now. I've had a number of calls, but I've just simply not been able to put the time into the applications to respond.
The Will those be subject to the new fee?
Those will be subject to the new fee. At this point, they're merely at the application stage. Just to give some explanation to the directors, my top priority is, in general, operations, current operations and current customers. So when I'm working with development, they take a second seat to our operations and our current customers. I think that's necessary. And in order to help with that development process, we talked about a flow chart. The district has done flow charts in the past. We are reviewing our plans and specifications currently. That's under review by Boyle under a task order. We have some inputs on that. There's a draft. Staff have reviewed the draft. We'll put out a second draft of that. That'll go to our council. And along that path, we'll improve our flow chart and our just clarification of our procedure for going through a development approval with the district. And by not contracting out, but having our plan checks done outside by, again, via task order arrangement with engineering firms, that's also freed up staff time, made that process I think cleaner or more understood by the developers, and we are hearing a positive response on that. And it's also taken that off of the manager's desk, which is something I'm trying to focus on now, is get some of these things off the manager's desk. So a bit of explanation there. We had an application, a service application. It was on the agenda up until the final review of the agenda, and I contacted the applicant. This was for a six-lot subdivision on the property that Kaleidoscope Inn is currently on. And when I called the applicant for a final check, this was an application that we had delayed, did not have it on our last agenda because of our agenda constraints to go into closed session. And then when I called the applicant back to confirm for this agenda, they said, well, we're reconsidering the whole thing. We want to pull that application. And again, it looked to me a bit like a hurried application, somebody hoping to come in under the old rates. Mr. Nestor's name was on that as a agent, and I think he's quite clear about the way the district is standing on rates, and so maybe pulled that back and thinking that they need to think that through thoroughly before coming to the district. And I will say that our procedure or our intent to serve our additional expiration constraint within the intent to serve that says our intent to serve letters will expire within 8 months unless they have completed their county application. We're following through with that. We've sent a number of letters then to those who have received intent to serve letters in the recent 8 months, if you will, and I think that's going very well, and that now our developers are understanding that they need to when they come to us, they need to be prepared or nearly complete with the county so that county application is complete and they're moving through the process as opposed to speculating on water or fees. So that's, again, I think that's going well. We have our student intern on board, as you know. He's busy categorizing fire hydrants. You may see him out and about in the district. He's focusing on what we call Zone A, which is basically east of Highway 101 right now. We'll go through fire hydrants and valves and meters in Zone A, putting that data into our reporting system before we move further on. I've also got him working on a procedure for reviewing and updating our GIS program. As directors may understand, we've had a GIS program in place for some 4 or 5 years. However, field staff has been reluctant to embrace it, if you will, due to a number of errors that are in the program. And what I've identified is that there's been a lack of procedure for how we get field staff to ground truth and then to get that information back to our Nobel Systems, who is our consultant in support of that system. So again, our student intern, who's savvy in GIS, is going to help us establish that protocol, get that system up to date, and he'll also then help me introduce that system more formally to our field staff. They've already seen it our billing clerk is convinced she's got a copy of the program at her front desk and has used that for to answer various questions she'll get at the front desk. So I think once we truth it up and then show its utility, we'll be making better use of it.
But those systems are only as good as you keep them updated.
That's right. Yeah. So that's what we talked about, is establishing, again, a protocol for updates. We'll have to have some significant updates initially, and then routine updates. We do send off as-built. We have a good procedure for that. But it's, again, for when staff's out in the field and says, that hydrant's not as it shows on the map. It's hydrants over here. And then getting that simple update back, those onesies, and getting that procedure in place. But already, some of the field staff have seen the program. They've seen the utility of being able to add layers, look at different things. We have an aerial layer now that provides us a real picture of what is physically in place out there and where the roads are in relationship to our hydrants. It's really nice. I was going to try to bring it up here for a display to the directors, but the aerial is so large that on the wireless here, it doesn't load well. So, but I'll make sure I have that loaded up and maybe hard connect in at a future meeting and share that a bit with you. It's pretty exciting. Our urban water management plan update's moving along. There's actually, the consultant has a request for data into the district, and it's in our park. I've got to respond to that request, and we'll do my best to do that by the end of the week. We received a request for proposals for operation of the Woodlands facility yesterday in the mail. I haven't even looked at it yet, other than there's a big ball of plans and a cover letter. But the Woodlands is going out for requests for operations.
Of what?
I believe water and wastewater, but I have not looked at the request specifically yet. As soon as I do, I'll break that open and forward that to all a copy of.
So
the
they want to contract out the management of their systems?
Mm-hmm. Yes. They contacted us some months ago and asked if we were interested, and we spoke on that, and directors assured me we were interested, and I forwarded that, and now that request for proposals is in. So we'll be taking a look at that and bringing it in front of the board for an initial review, and then also in the future with a staff recommendation.
There's a phone going unanswered someplace.
It'll have to go forward to our answer service. Our standards and specs document, as I mentioned earlier, that's being reviewed right now. We're looking at it specifically the drawings and specifications. Boyle Engineering's helping us with that. We've done our internal staff review. We'll be sitting down with Boyle next week. We'll do a second draft. I'll be sharing that with district council. We envision incorporating in our standards and specs not just the construction standards and specifications, but also our plan check inspection agreement, our various forms that have to do with development. Those are our dedication forms, etc. All in one clean package. We'll also work up a refined flowchart procedure and have a complete package available for developers, both in hard copy and on our website. I think the last time there was any revision was back in 2002, but the majority of our standards and specs right now are something that was that were brought forward from the county years ago when the previous general manager was just starting here. So plenty of room for improvement there, and we're proceeding with it. Touching on wastewater a bit, both our plants continue to operate well. The Black Lake Lagoon, number one, is still drained. We have received a sub-bid, if you will, for sludge removal out there on the order of $20,000. However, the removal calls for removing it from the Black Lake ponds and depositing it over at our Southland plant, because the agent that's proposing heard from the City of Santa Maria landfill that they would not accept the sludge. And I'll be following up on that. I do believe that... I'll get clarification on that. I believe that we'll be able to take the sludge, sand, it's really quite a bit of sand, off to the Santa Maria landfill. If we'll have to do some testing, but that should, I think that'll be a better process for us as opposed to just taking it out to Southland and scratching our heads and wondering what we'll do with it out there. So,
You know, most of the research that has been hostile to the use of sludge has been in situations where industrial waste deposit heavy metals in the sludge.
And right.
Where it's strictly domestic or agricultural use, there's virtually no contrary reasons for not using it.
Right. It certainly is viable for disposal in a lined Class 3 landfill, in my understanding, and I do... from past life have quite a bit of information along those lines, and actually grow mulch, the very common garden product you'll see has got sludge from the Hyperion plant in Los Angeles in it, which has much higher metals than we do. So anyway, we'll pursue that and work with Mr. Gehring to again put a bid package together and get back out to bid on that. But in the meantime, Black Lake plant is operating well, and we have our discharge limits are being met without a problem. We've added some additional aeration devices out there, and that's helped us keep our dissolved oxygen levels high and our treatment level high. Now, of course, we have the salts issue continuing out there at Black Lake, and that is that our sodium and chloride in the effluent of the treatment plant exceed the state mandated limits. We have had recent support from the Homeowners Association out in Black Lake, the Master Association. I've been keeping Director Trotter informed of my email and correspondence with that group. They have issued a statement out there to all homeowners in Black Lake that these self-regenerating water softeners are illegal. They're against even the Homeowners Association's CCNRs, and that the Black Lake community will be taking action to enforce that come September of this year. So that's generated, of course, some response and questions, but then I'm assisting the folks out in Black Lake with answering, and I know that the Regional Water Quality Control Board is happy to see us proceeding actively addressing that issue. Hermrick Well actually spoke with Mr. Spencer Harris of Tim Cleese's staff this morning. Looks like they did have at least the initial response from a second review or the peer review of their downhole geophysical interpretation. That peer review is agreeing with Mr. Cleese's interpretation that this formation is in fact salty. I'm expecting then the written peer review and then Mr. Cleese follow-up and final recommendation to the board. And I, again, had a verbal commitment that could be on my desk within 2 weeks, and that was this morning. But it's not looking favorable, and I don't expect that we'll be bringing or completing the Hermrick Well, and that is, you know, putting pumps in the well and whatnot at this point.
How do you feel that affects our concept of fractured rock drilling as being a viable source for future water supplies?
I think our concept all along was that fractured rock drilling is a hit and miss proposition at best, and I think it remains that. I think so that there was quite a bit of discussion up front that this was not a total crapshoot here, but that there were... we had reservations, we were hopeful. But
so far we have one miss and no hits though, right?
That's correct. And I think what a hydrogeologist will tell you is, you know, we could move 10 feet to the left and have completely different results. I think at this point, we'll approach it differently if we go after deep rock again. But right now we have a very viable supplemental water project that we're pursuing. We'll be focused on pursuing and completing that supplemental water project, and then we'll take on the next supplemental water project when that time comes. We have, of course, our alternative study, which remains viable, that Kenny and Jinks did back in 2002 to reflect back on. I think we'll keep an eye also on what goes on with the desalination efforts that are going throughout the state right now, including our local area.
I hope we give special attention to those that recondition brackish water.
Understood. I've heard that from the directors before, I think, especially reflecting on water and the what we call, I think, the Upper Guadalupe Formation or out there in the Guadalupe area, where there's quite a bit of perched water that's formed with return flows from heavy agricultural pumping from the deep aquifer becoming perched on a clay lens that's actually the historic Guadalupe lake bed is what that is, and that results in high water that where they have tile drain fields there, and produces quite a bit of water that's discharged to Oso Flaco. Could be a viable source for us in the future. The Santa Maria pipeline, I had mentioned that we had supplemental items prepared by Canyon Associates previously. I have now discussed those items with Ernie Ray, the senior engineer at Canyon, who is our project contact, and we'll finalize those items, and I'll forward a copy of each to the directors. Basically, what we have there are some requests that Mr. Doug Wood made is, for some additional exhibits for the CEQA preparation, and also an estimate of probable costs and time schedule for this project. I've had Mr. Ray add to that pipeline coming from the potential connection point, which is down at Orchard and Joshua, the turn in Orchard to the south end, where there is a pipeline that's been constructed but not yet dedicated to the district. That was our initial perceived tie-in point, and we're going to add some costs, and he said there would be no add to the schedule, time-wise, that is, to run a district pipeline up from Joshua and Orchard all the way up Orchard to connect with the district system. And that's basically a fallback position in case we can't complete the deal with the development down there, Maria Vista Estates, namely.
Well, in addition, the pipeline, the Maria Vista pipeline, isn't big enough to do the 6,000.
It's a little undersized.
If we go up to 6,000, that's not adequate anyway.
Right. The day we complete the Cross the River pipeline, we won't have a 6,000 acre foot flow. So we will.
No, but capacity? You might have 6,000 capacity.
Yes. And so there'd have to be some additional pipelines built or parallel pipes that would follow. I think what's of special interest on the pipeline, we have sat down now, a subcommittee of the directors and staff have sat down with county staff and the development community's representation regarding the supplemental pipeline project, and actually and also the county's requirement for supplemental water for all new development across our planning area. We've received a very positive support both from the Builders Association and the county that such a planning standard is in the works, and again, you've got that staff report update from Mr. Hand. What's also come out of those meetings is a proposal from the development community to build the supplemental water pipeline similar to how off-site improvements might be done on any single development project. And that is to come in, build a project, build the pipeline specifically, the connection to the city of Santa Maria, to the district standards and specifications with the district's review and acceptance, and then dedicate that pipeline to the district. And the building community feels that they can do that more timely and more cost-effectively than the district could. And then, of course, the building community looks to recoup costs. Anyway, that proposal, I think, is very preliminary at this stage. Interesting, I would typify it, but in need of quite a bit of work before we can be comfortable heading that way, or before staff can be comfortable coming back to the full board with a recommendation. I will point out that one of the discussions I had this week was with our rate consultant, as he's continued to aid in my work with Mr. Markman in trying to convince the Woodlands folks to get on board with our supplemental water project. Mr. Reed did some rate work for us to give an example rate for Woodlands customers, what Woodlands customers might see based on a 500-acre-foot delivery of water. That was very helpful that the rate was comparable to the district's higher, but that's because Woodlands is choosing to backload the entire process. They're not talking about putting any money up front. But in that discussion with Mr. Reed, we talked about this proposal from the development community, and he brought up a point that and made it quite clear to me. Right now we have an $11,000 connection fee, as you all know, for supplemental water. Only $1,200 of that connection fee is earmarked to pipeline construction, the intertie pipeline construction. Okay, the other $9,900 some odd dollars is tied to the infrastructure costs that are being passed along to us in the water rate, the $1,250 per acre foot water rate that the city of Santa Maria is selling us water at. So that's a point that I've already informed Mr. Jerry Bunin, the contact with the Home Builders Association, that look, because they were in their mind, they were thinking if they built the pipeline and reserved their flow, then that would basically negate our $11,000 connection fee. And initially, that was my thought also. I thought that's what we're talking about. But it was very good early on, and Mr. Bunin understood my explanation right away, and I'm able to produce that in Mr. Reed's report. He's got as we'd expect from working with the man, a page that lays that right out and shows just how we've come up with the $11,000 connection fee and how it is linked to the $1,250 per acre foot water rate. So that's information I have fed back to the Home Builders Association right away. But again, we've got, I think, quite a bit of work there. From a staff standpoint, I'll tell you that it's an interesting proposal that I would hope we could find a way to make work if we can protect the district's interests properly. I have spoke with LAFCO. There was one of our questions came out early on from the subcommittee of our directors as to whether such a project would be legal from the LAFCO standpoint, and they assured me that yes, it would. This is simply, they saw that as a unique method of resolving the supplemental water issue for the Mesa, but that it did not affect their proposal, I mean their approval process in any way. And the developer's representatives have stated to us in the meeting that they were quite aware that obtaining a reservation in a water pipeline did nothing to affect their process for approval of any development project. That it would still require, if the project required CEQA for impacts, it would still require CEQA for impacts. It would still have to go through the public approval process and et cetera. So anyway, so our initial contact with LAFCO on that was positive.
May I ask you some questions about Mr. Ufret's letter? Which we got a copy of today. So we haven't had a chance to study through, but two things come up. I still have a problem with point one, saying the county would be part of a joint powers agreement, but they have no real interest in terms of the lawsuit on the Mesa.
We're reviewing that, but see, I see it just the opposite. I see it as a positive result. If they're part of the process, then it may put some impetus in them in adopting the appropriate ordinances to facilitate the goals, of supplemental water and supplemental water fees.
Generally speaking, they have not been helpful, in my view, in that they legislate all sorts of things for us to do in this joint powers agreement. I don't know whether they would or not. And then they have no responsibility for funding it or anything.
Well, see, I would see it just maybe a twist.
No,
if the county was to adopt a area plan similar to Orca, then they would be collecting the money as part of the JPA and sending it to the JPA for the supplemental water. I'm not saying that's the only process that they would be involved in, but yeah, it could be part of it.
And then on number five, it says land divisions may be approved without condition for supplemental water, but they're going to have to pay a fee for fair share of bringing supplemental water. My question is, I know of a new subdivision that's starting up on Mesa. They will divide into 5-acre parcels. They're designing it so that each house has its own well as an overlying user. I don't see how we're going to require them to pay anything for supplemental water.
It would depend on the whether or not they adopt the area plan similar to ORCID that would require them to, as a condition. Remember, these are all discretionary developments. So I assume this is a discretionary request for an LDO.
Well, I think any subdivision is discretionary, but it's right within their zoning. It requires no change in
correct. Zoning. Let me update the ORCID community plan. First, what you were reading from is a discussion and background and not 6 points that are being forwarded as a direction that county staff's taking. This is
okay.
So we're simply reading the background of what county staff feels that the board of directors directed them to explore back on May 10th. And now, the discussions at our meetings with county staff and again the building associate or the building representatives are along the lines that a supplemental water mitigation fee would be paid for all discretionary development, and including the one that you've outlined here. And the emphasis, what one of the concerns that the purveyors brought up right away is that to the extent feasible, new development be connected through a purveyor and take an actual wet water delivery so that the ongoing costs of that supplemental water delivery are borne by the actual user of the supplemental water. Now, that can't be done in all cases because there will be development where simply it just doesn't make any sense to take a pipeline to that development, in which case they'd pay a one-time mitigation fee, and that fee would go then to the supplemental water project's ongoing operational costs and expense.
They received well drilling permits and they're starting to drill today.
Well, there's nothing in place right now.
We don't have anything in place. That's the unfortunate.
Yeah, there's nothing in place today. If they've received,
how does that change after? Say once we do, can you actually set a planning standard that negates overlying users' water rights?
I don't think those are questions that we can necessarily answer. I think those are questions that the county
legal counsel,
the county staff, and county council are reviewing.
The brief answer is yes. I mean, first of all, let's just say somebody had 20 acres. Could they put it, and they're not part of the adjudication, let's just make all the worst case assumptions here, and they want to put a well in. They can put a well in.
Sure.
Okay. Let's go to, because I think it's just a building permit, and that's an administrative permit, generally speaking. Now let's go to the next level. I want to subdivide. It's a discretionary permit. Can they place conditions on the development as a discretionary permit, including findings of overdraft and supplemental water? Absolutely. I don't know that it's not negating a property right on an existing use. It is negating maybe a property right on a proposed discretionary use as a condition of development.
It's clear to me that if they had a general plan amendment and they changed the density or used other methods of changing density, I understand the rationale easily. But when the zoning's already in place, say it's RR and they're entitled to 5-acre parcels, and they took the 20 and they divided it into 4 parcels, it's discretionary, maybe, but it's pretty slam dunk.
It was explained in the meetings we had that such a fee would be very similar to a road fee, a road mitigation fee, and that, in fact, county staff feels, in initial consultation also with the county council, that it's very doable, and again they feel like they're ready to put in place an ORCID community plan type of standard. And in ORCID Warren Morgan, who's the general manager of Cal Cities, Water, has been attending these meetings regularly, and he is, of course, runs the Orchid area of Cal Cities, and so he's familiar with the Orchid Community Plan, and there's not a JPA in that case. The money is actually paid directly to the purveyors. What they're envisioning here is that this mitigation fee would be paid directly to the district. In the case of somebody who's simply paying a mitigation fee in order to increase their pumping, that fee would come straight to the district, and I asked for early clarification of the fact of what the district would be required to do with that mitigation fee, and what's being envisioned by the group again at this point is that simply those monies would be spent to maintain and operate the supplemental water project, but that they would not require the district then to go and reduce pumping by half an acre foot and bring in a half acre foot more supplemental water. Because the problem with that scenario is then the district would incur that ongoing cost of additional supplemental water delivery. Again, I think quite a bit of work there. I'm hopeful for is it's incredible the number of projects this district has on its horizon, and supplemental water, of course, I think is our number one priority. But we have, as you all know, a capital improvements project list for this coming year that is quite extensive in itself and includes at least initial. Study and design of a wastewater treatment plant upgrade, and various collector lines that have to be addressed, and we've got multi-million dollars earmarked for capital improvement projects coming also, and I'm honestly a bit of loss as to how to proceed in these multiple directions at once, but
that was one of my questions.
We'll figure that out as we go ahead. And
do we have the staff to?
Absolutely not. But we're going to work with consulting out and managing contracts. We are we of course have a new staff position that with the help of the assistant administrator, we hope to have in front of the board a job description and staffing description here at our next meeting this month for board approval, and then we'll get on going through the procedure to hire for that position. We have a meeting next week with Meter Reading Service. We've considered two proposals we received, and we are sitting down with one of the applicants to basically get clarification on their proposal, and hopefully we'll be in front of the board potentially again at our next meeting this month to bring a meter reading service on board. I think that will further reduce the pressure on our field staff and our office staff, as that meter reading contract, the one that we're going to look at is digital meter reading. That just means that the reads are taken physically, the meter is read, but then the information is input right into a device, like we see our electric companies do when they come out and read our meters. And so instead of our billing clerk receiving literally 3,000 written out meter reads to input, she receives an electronic file that is put in like this. And so we're doing what we can to work more efficiently, to bring on some outside contract help, if you will, because it, the state of affairs right now, I can tell you that it is very difficult to move projects forward. When this solid waste issue has come up, this is literally consumed the additional, that slim margin of free time that staff has to work on you know, forward-thinking planning and moving new projects forward, it's engulfed that, you know, in the last 3 weeks. Because, again, we have such a thin margin of that spare time to move on new projects beyond just operating this system and keeping ourselves up and running and addressing current customer issues. So. We're working toward it. It's been a great challenge and a great education, I will assure you. I want to say on our CEQA for our pipeline project, staff, that's council and myself, have reviewed notice of preparation and an initial study. Is that the other doc? We are preparing, actually our board secretary is preparing a mailing list, a broad mailing list that we'll be basing on, I guess, kind of the standard agencies and as we've discussed here with the board, the county and the various aspects of the county. But we've also gone to the Santa Clara Court website and taken a complete listing of those that are on their information list. And so we'll be heading that out to a broad array of potentially interested parties. And that should go out, I would expect, by the end of next week. Hopefully at our next meeting I'll be able to tell you that that's on the street, and of course you'll see that when it is. I also want to note that the Prop 50 grant application that the county have been coordinating, that's the Integrated Regional Water Management application, that has been completed. We had some assistance from Canon again on that to complete some final attachments for that. I think there were on the order of 10 attachments that the district needed and did provide to the county as part of that application, along with numerous water resources documents that this district has provided over the years. And I've received notice that the complete application's gone out, and I believe I even have an attachment to my email of that complete application, but I have not looked at it or reviewed it yet myself. A county staff person contacted me on it, and I know she was quite excited about completing it and wanted my feedback, and I was like, well, I haven't read it yet, but anyway, it is up to the state, and we expect to hear back in November as to whether we've made the first cut, if you will, and they're looking then for a subsequent application and more information. So that should be in the November time frame. Remain hopeful there. And we'll also be looking into other areas of Proposition 50 for potential grant monies that could come toward our pipeline project. On the conservation front, if you will, while we haven't had, as you all know, a real active efforts on conservation, we do have our fiscal year numbers for the end of fiscal 04-05, which of course ended on June 30th. And based on our total production per connection, and the only way I can do this is on June 30th, 04, we had a production number for the fiscal year, and we had a number of connections. And then on June 30th, 2005, we were able to pull out the same data. We have 12% less production per connection in the fiscal year that ended June 30th, 2005, than we did in the fiscal year that ended 2004.
Now, is that
you can count on it?
Is that single-family residences that is, only?
No, that is our standard. Oh. Is.
Then it doesn't mean much.
It
because
means
we had a big water year, and agriculture is one of our biggest accounts.
I agree.
But what? Well, it's overall though.
The standard that this district was given from LAFCO was that our production per connection would be the basis for our conservation. I think it's far from a perfect system, but that is in fact the standard. And I think, you know, the whole request or requirement to produce a 15% conservation number prior to annexation is. I could debate that, but we can't debate these numbers. And I know, as we all know, that we've had a great rain year. I don't know how LAFCO envisioned them compensating for rain years and dry years.
We'll take credit for the rain.
But these are simply the numbers. And I did have discussions with Mr. David Church. I have it right?
Yeah.
Over at LAFCO just yesterday. I didn't have these numbers in hand at that point, but he was already talking to me about ways that we could be creative in meeting that goal and recognizing some things, because I think LAFCO is looking at that requirement too and saying, now how is that going to work? So, in any event, I thought that was interesting. We had an event on the high school well recently. This is actually, it's also called Dana Well 3. It's a well over at Dana School. that I see some heads up and down that the Lucia Marsh School District owns. They pump the well, wheel the water through our system under a contractual agreement, and water the high school.
Mm-hmm.
There was an analysis done of that well back in April, end of April, that showed a nitrate level at the maximum contaminant level. That's 45 milligrams per liter as a nitrate. And that came to the attention of Department of Health Services via the State Department of Health Services, via the county's health department, who happens to review school-specific data. And then DHS called me, and my initial response was just, please tell me that I don't need the public notice on this. And he said, no, if it was 45.1, however, you would. And if it exceeded the MCL, and again, it hit the MCL. It was right at the MCL. Anyway, we took action to coordinate with the district. We'd taken action prior to this to actually coordinate with the district sampling and operational oversight of that well for chlorination and the other aspects that we look at on a routine basis. And anyway, we contacted the district immediately, and I sent our staff out to shut the well down regardless. Initiated a resample. The resamples come back lower. We've put that well on our regular sampling schedule, so it will be sampled again this week because that's what the district's regular well sampling schedule is. And then Lucia Marr is committed to sample that again 1 month after this, the resample. And so we're working with Department of Health Services and coordinating with them on response to this well. In the meantime, we've had to reschedule a meeting with Mr. Kevin Baker of Lucia Marr. He is the new facilities director. He's taken over for a gentleman named Perry Judd who left the district some months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have a meeting with Mr. Baker. We have that actually scheduled for next week to sit down with him, talk about these operational aspects of the well and then the contract itself. And I think Dana Elementary School, which to my knowledge remains on a fire hydrant bypass supply as they try to bring up a new well out at that school. And what I mean by fire hydrant bypass supply is we've issued them a fire hydrant meter last summer in order to provide temporary supply while their site well went dry and had to be replaced. And that saga has continued on at this point. So right now that school is receiving water via our fire hydrant into their reservoir tank on site and then into their distribution system. I'll be talking with Mr. Baker about the potential source of the nitrate, for one, as the Dana Elementary School remains on a septic system. So I'll be pushing to have Lucia Marr see the opportunity and benefit of connecting that school to the district, abandoning that septic tank, mm-hmm. And possibly abandoning their efforts to establish a water supply for that school.
Again, that's Dana. Are they near enough to a sewer line that they can be connected?
Yes. Yes.
It's close.
Oh, it runs. We're that far up TEF now.
Oh, we are that far.
Oh, yeah.
I thought there was a break right in there. You know, just before Orchard, and then you went a little further.
No, it runs up. We run up Teft, up just past Orchard, I believe.
Well, they're just past.
Bring the GeoViewer system up here.
So you go all the way. So you, there's no Hazel. Break on Teft then in your division.
You're being
Orchard.
I'd have to look at the GeoViewer program, and then I'd still question it until I talked to Butch Simmons. Is the way it is right now, but and I don't want to speak off the top of my head on that because I'm just not that familiar with our operations at this standpoint.
Yeah, I thought there was a break in there. Somewhere.
But anyway, I think that overall response, if you will, to the incident or almost incident, I think was effective, and I know Department of Health Services, we documented everything, kept them informed all along, and they were very happy with our response.
Then their water rates, they must be paying a very large bill these days because it doubles and doubles again when they...
Yeah, the high school's contractor, that's another issue, but they were able to bring the well back up online within 3 days of the initial, of us shutting it down because they resampled, the sample was well within the nitrate limit. And so that well's back online. Be clear about that.
Yeah, as far as the hybrid water meter, that's for the Dana school.
That's for the Dana school.
So they pay, you know, whatever rate.
Outside user agreement?
I believe they're probably paying the hydrant meter rate, which was the second tier of our water rate.
Yeah, that's it.
Is our standard for construction.
Which, yeah, that's more than they've been paying in the past. So their well went belly up.
And I think I look forward to sitting down with Mr. Baker and renewing some discussions along these lines. I personally feel that, you know, our schools are part of our community.
Yeah.
They provide a community benefit, not just to the children who are at the schools, but to the people who utilize the turf and the fields. And by making those fields and turf available, maybe there's a reduction in turf and water use throughout the district. I would expect that there is. And that we should at least have we should have a strong relationship with these other providers of service to the community as we are. They're a district, a services district in a sense to our community, just as we are, and there's no reason why we shouldn't have open and positive relationships with them. And that will be my attempt to establish that as we go forward. Datamatic is the automatic reader, meter reading company that we contracted with some years ago. They were out. They replaced 218 of the readers out in the Black Lake area. Their product has evolved significantly since its miserable failure here at the district. So they've come out and replaced those 218 readers at completely at their cost. They had a field crew out here, did that replacement. And now we're in a testing or truthing period we're watching to see if there's any drift between those meters and actual readings between the automatic reading devices. There's some real potential for these automatic meter reading devices. One of them being right in the first couple of days of testing, they put these devices on. The device also records internally and will alert the reader if there's a constant demand on the meter. Mm. And it did so. And a constant demand on a meter means you got a leak.
That's right.
And so it's a real leak detection tool. In fact, we found a couple of our meters to be leaking just on this initial replacement and test. So we've got that reserved optimism back, I think, but we've got some bridges to cross. I know that we're still going to pursue the outside meter reading contract, and when we do that, we'll be looking for a year-to-year type of contract so that if we get over the hurdle with Datamatic, where we're convinced of their product and its ability and want to go to the automatic meter reading, we'll be able to at least renegotiate our contract if there's any need at all to have that outside contract with an outside meter reader, because it could really make our meter reading more efficient and make our leak detection capabilities and our ability to provide customer feedback and data much greater. Right now, as you know, we had a high water, we get high water bills sometimes. People have leaks and they want to know when it occurred, what the meter said. And all we are doing now is reading the meter once every 2 months. The automatic meter reading devices will literally get a reading every 30 minutes and store that for 75 days in the device, and we'll be able to download that. Mm-hmm. So we'll be able to provide the information that the customers look for to say, when they say, well, I was out of town, I had no water demand. And they say, well, you know, here you are, your watering system, it appears, is coming on every day. You've got a demand at 1 a.m. that's the same 7 days a week. So, anyway, provide much greater feedback to the customer on their water use. So I think the utility has great potential. I hope that we can.
And we can actually notify then individual rate payers if they have a constant demand on their meter. Mm-hmm. We can say,
that's
proactively,
right,
we believe that.
You have a leak.
You have a leak.
That's right.
And now, although that would only be known every 2 months, is that correct? Or does this thing send out a signal to a satellite and it's transmitted?
No, the signal's localized. The signal's localized, has to be picked up by an antenna as our meter reader would drive by. And that's when it would be picked up and it would alert.
Yeah, so the alert then would be after the fact. In other words, during the meter reading process.
But it would have an entire record of the last 75 days.
When it started.
So our procedure would be something along the lines of, if it alerts that there's a leak or a high read, an abnormally high read in your consent criteria based on that meter's read a year ago period, would be what I foresee as our criteria. If it's an abnormally, it's out of the band high, it'll alert. Staff can then download the complete data set from that meter reading device and have that available then to explain to the customer and provide record. And as opposed to the current system where we read the meter and the staff person has no way of knowing if that's high or low compared to what it was a year ago, or if there's been a constant leak going on or anything. And until that bill goes out to the customer, it's unknown. Other than our billing clerk does her best to do literally a manual truthing, which is, I think she does a real good job, but there's no way she can catch all that goes on. And it also works the other way. When our meters start drifting low and dying, so we're losing income because our meter's not reading right, it can also pick up that type.
Yeah, I was just thinking, because if the guy, for whatever reason, his irrigation line or some water line running out in the backyard decided to spring a leak on day three, he really wouldn't know about it until sometime.
And I'll tell you, a very small leak at 60 PSI behind it, and I'm talking, we've got a little chart up there at the front desk, it can literally waste a 500,000 gallons in a 60-day billing period. And that's what, you know, people question, how is this possible? And then with our sand situation, it may have little or no surface exposure.
That's right. You may never even see it.
I'll try to move through. I'm hemming and hawing over here. Okay. we have fenced Sardina wellheads. That's something that has been going on for months, and so those wellheads have been fenced. We still have some easement issues out there, but our position on those easements is quite strong and justified, so I don't think we'll have any problems going forward, at least problems that we can't defend. We've received some plans from our developer on those Dana wellheads, and those have been reviewed by our consulting engineer, in this case, Jim Gehring, and I'll get those responses back. But basically, they're very scant drawings at this point, but we're going to continue to move forward there. That is all I had listed, but if there are any questions I might be able to answer, I'd be happy to.
I have a question.
Mr. Eby.
The supplemental water pipeline.
Yes.
You are moving ahead and doing a lot of things that I think are the right things to do, getting some preliminary information from your engineering people. You mentioned that also that you were going to solicit a financial consultant to determine what's a good way to finance, what is the best way to finance the pipeline. Since we're getting proposals from people who want to finance the pipeline for us, I'd like to see an impartial analysis of what the best way of many is to finance it, whether it's bonds, whether it's an outside builder consortium, whatever. We have this proposal in front of us, a preliminary proposal from the developers, which I'm very leery about. I have a lot of reservations about. But I'd like to see a professional analysis on what are ways to fund the pipeline, what are alternate ways, so that we can see, is this a good deal, is this a bad deal, are there things that we haven't explored, and so forth. Have you got anybody lined up yet to do that?
No, we haven't, not at this point.
I think we need that sort of opinion and outside expertise before we go very far in stringing along these developers that think that their proposal is going to be adopted, because I'm sure not ready to approve that until I hear a lot more alternatives and professional opinions.
Yeah, well, I understand. I take that action.
Sort of wanting to go along with Ed is that same individual could look into other communities who maybe contracted with the same kind of scheme. I don't want to call it a scheme, but the same method to finance it, and what the lessons learned were. You know, because in retrospect, if we had known, we should have, if we had, we could have, you know, so.
Well, if the home builders thought they were going to get $11,000 credit per unit and they're only going to get 10% of that, it certainly may change their, the appeal of going that direction.
I'm certain it will change their consideration of it. I think one of the other aspects that they look at is they see that their development projects are going to be conditioned on there being supplemental water. And they also see the districts, and I've stated to them that my priority is to current operations and current customers, and that these projects all have to take a back seat. Supplemental water, however, of course, is something that is a current operational issue, as I've outlined, in the need for diversity of water supply and correcting a pumping problem that we've caused with, you know, our current level of pumping. But in any event, I think one motivator for them is that they feel that the project will be accomplished in a more timely manner, and probably, and they feel also in a more cost-effective manner if they do it as a off-site improvement dedicated at the scenario to the district. And so I'm not in a position to argue, I guess, one way or the other.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. I want to make it real clear. One of the aspects and concerns that the subcommittee has had, and I continue to have, with the home builders' representation is that there's been a party at the table.
Sat right next to you this time. Right,
that's actively suing the district, and I've made it quite clear in follow-up conversation since the last meeting that I could not see the district entering into any sort of agreement along these lines.
I just think we just discussed this in closed session.
Okay.
This is part of the ongoing adjudication, or litigation, I'm sorry.
We'll pick that up in closed session.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. LeBrun. With that, we'll move to committee reports. We'll start with Mrs. Worsing. Okay. Mr. Eby?
I'm not sure. Is the thing that we have with this meeting that we've been having with the county and the developers, is that a committee meeting? And if so, what's the name of the committee?
Supplemental Water.
Well, committee. Yes and no, committee. Not really.
That's what was assigned in January.
I don't think that's a... I don't think that's an
Water Resources Subcommittee?
I don't think it's an official committee.
It's a standing committee.
But I'll be glad to report on what... I mean, we had an annexation committee that you and I are on deal with these other people.
There's actually a conflict. I was going to raise that today. There's a conflict between our committee and this committee.
Well, that's why I'm saying I'm not
I'll just sure it's make, a committee. We have standing committee assignments, and this we made this year Santa Maria Supplemental Water standing committee, and that's Ed Eby as the chairperson and Larry Verheilig as the member, and that's the subcommittee that we're working under here.
Well, then that meeting we had was
It's not really a committee because it's not supplemental water. It's a planning area standards.
Yeah.
To
either was established by the board or it wasn't. Come on.
It was not established by what you're talking about, Ed and myself meeting with county planning.
Isn't it because you two are the supplemental water committee?
Well, that's supplemental water is meetings with Cannon and Doug Wood and those kinds of folks.
I wouldn't limit that committee. Placing limitations on that committee, I think it's just going to make the issue more confusing. If that's the, what's the name of that committee?
Santa Maria Supplemental Water.
Yeah, I don't see why there would be any issue as to whether or not that would be the committee, because all we're talking about is supplemental water, correct?
Yeah.
Well, and planning area standards
the planning area standards has a direct nexus to supplemental water.
Sure.
So yeah. I don't think we need to form another committee if that committee is
But what I'm suggesting is maybe we collapse the annexation committee into your committee and let you do both. The only reason I say it is because Ed and I meet with a group to talk about annexations instead of Area 1. Mm-hmm. Then you and Ed meet with the same people, a number of the same people, and talk about many of the same issues, which means we're on the brink of a Brown Act problem because there's three of us talking about the same things to the same people on policy. And I'm not, I think it'd be simpler if the two of you simply did it, or some two, obviously, but not three, the way we're doing it now.
Yeah, I thought your committee was mainly discussing the annexation process.
Well, we do, but of course it's all about water. It's all about supplemental water and design about water and how much water each type of construct would use and landscaping. And it's all, I mean, we don't get into anything else except water and sewer. So, and then people that have met with Ed and me say, well, what are we going to do Thursday? And I say, I don't know anything about a meeting on Thursday. And it turns out it's another meeting. You see?
Uh-huh.
It's getting
okay. Tricky. I guess
they do
tend to overlap a little more than I assume that they would.
Well, regardless, I was going to report on what this non-committee or non-committee did, if you want me to. We met with the county planners, and this is, I guess, this thing from John Hand or John Euphret is what they, it's kind of the minutes of that meeting. What happened is the developers came up with a proposal that they want us to agree to, where they would fund the pipeline, and I guess we up front they'd provide the money, and then we'd pay them back eventually out of the revenues. That sounds good. I question whether it's legal and so forth, and we'll get those questions answered. But the other thing is, what's in it for them? Well, what's in it for them is they want a guaranteed supply of water, and I have real reservations with that because I think we're having a supplemental water mission creep. I mean, originally, to me, supplemental water was to provide water for the people, number one, the people within the current NCSD customers. Mm-hmm. Number two, the people within the NCSD boundaries who are liable to become customers. And a distant third is provide the capability for supplemental water for people in our sphere of influence. All of a sudden now that we're talking about developers who want to be guaranteed a source of water, supplemental water, and they might not even be in the sphere of influence. They might be that way, outside the sphere of influence, yet we guarantee them a supply of water that comes from our supplemental water. And so I think, before we get too far on this, we need to have an agreement or a policy on who the supplemental water is for, and what it is for. I originally thought it was for a very limited purpose. Now all of a sudden, there are people who would like it to be for them, outside developers, and their development might or might not be in our sphere of influence, and they want to make this supplemental water allocation to them portable. In other words, they can sell their allocation to somebody else in some other location. And I have real problems with that. And I'll be able to make those arguments some other time. But I think those are issues that we need to talk about before we get too far. Anyhow, they left that proposal on the table for us. And I don't know if it's going to change or what we're going to do on it, but I'm not comfortable with agreeing to anything about that, at least until we get our financial consultants to give us an opinion on options to financing the supplemental water project. So that was the end of it. I think we have another meeting scheduled in the future
on the 26th,
but I'm not sure. I'm not sure what can come out of that because I'm not prepared to approve anything. I'll listen, but I need to hear some more expert advice than I have myself. on the best way to finance this thing.
Well, and whatever draft they're circulating maybe could come back to this board, be agendized, and have a general discussion so that you guys know whether you've got a solid majority with you, whichever way you're going.
Right. Well, at this point, I don't think that the draft they gave us, I think we could share, but I'm a no way confident that that's something I'd approve at this point. Just because, not only because of what it says, but because we haven't heard enough options. Hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's my report.
Okay, Mr. Wynn?
Mr. Trotter and I met for the to look at water permitting for commercial zone areas. We found a number of interesting things. Based on our 2004 use, which we sent to the state of California, the average single family used 63.63 acre feet last year. Multifamily used 0.47, which is a lot more than what we assumed.
That's a lot more than what.
And commercial used on average over an acre foot per customer. Now, again, we have is the total numbers here, and it would be helpful if we had data that we could look at in terms of skew and kurtosis to find out what a standard deviation is on these numbers, and maybe we can talk about that later. Landscape irrigation averaged 4 acre feet per customer, and farmers, agriculture, we only have 3, but they average 6 acre feet each. So coming up with a number for commercial is kind of an interesting exercise. Any rationale used didn't work very well. For example, we looked at what percentage of our total residential use is commercial takes, and it's about 4.5%, 5% would be compared. If we don't cut into the 51 acre feet a year that we set aside for residential growth, and we created another amount, we're really only creating enough for 1 or 2 businesses a year in the district. This is not annexations now. It would be around 2.5 acre feet a year would be the total permitting for commercial, which would pretty much kill anything that went on here in the Old Town or in the West F corridor. So coming up with a rationale or a percentage, we decided we'd come back to you guys and see what you thought was a workable solution. Here's a number of unanswered questions. One, we have a category called other, which is, for example, the water that we use here in the district. It's when we flush the system, and commercial, they have a meter, that's meter. Now, this is all metered. This is not loss. Other, last year, used 146 acre feet, which is about almost 3 years new growth. So before we get a handle on commercial growth, maybe we need to look at this category other and try to break that down into some meaningful subdivisions, because there's a lot of water there it's accounted for, but I'm not sure it's planned. So that's where we are now. What I'm going to do, Cliff could not be here today, so I don't propose that we take any particular action, but he and I will meet one more time. We'll give you some choices, and we'll ask you to agendize it at that time, and we can look at what's a solid policy. In addition, then, we will be asking you whether or not you want to have a proportional element to water permitting on annexations. In other words, if an annexation is bringing in unlimited water, and this is back to Ed's concern, then do they break it up in any way they choose, or do they need to stay within the proportions that we have in the district? These are all questions for the future, and we'll talk about them when we get there.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr.
I have a question on this committee. Mm. Is your committee just worrying about commercial allocation, or are you going back and looking at the whole allocation?
We are not going back and touching the 51 acre feet for residential at all. we're only looking at the unlimited permitting.
I think that's, well, maybe at some point we need to go back and look at the other ones, because I noticed in the Growth Management Ordinance, EIR, I've started looking at that, and they have in there some interesting data on water usage based on parcel size. And for example, they have allocated 1.5 acre feet per year for 1 acre parcels, and another allocation for smaller parcels, and so forth. And I think that we, since we have a significant number of 1 acre parcels and other size parcels, I think we ought to go back and look at allocating it based on real life figures like they use in that EIR. That's why I don't think that our current allocation numbers are really very
well. Right now we're just doing committee meetings, and all I was doing, you guys set limits on the committee to talk about commercial.
That's just a thought that people ought to think about.
Permitting, and that's what I'm giving you now.
As far as the allocation goes, that's, you know, that is based somewhat on real life, less 15% conservation. So 8.6 less 15% could, you know, come be somewhere like 0.55. Okay. But yeah, that's where those numbers came from. It was including that 15% conservation. Of course, that's only a goal. That's only a goal. But well, thank you, Mr. Nguyen. I appreciate. I figured you were going to open up somewhat of a morass with this, because it is hard to tell. And okay, well, the Finance Committee met with staff and our impetus there was to wording and such that when we collect fees, when we collect these connection fees, it would be, the wording would be such that it allowed the district the greatest flexibility in so-called driving the stake in the round ground, making the calculation and collecting the fees, such that we wouldn't lock ourselves into a point where fees would be calculated and paid, and then the project or subsequently change hands and years go by, so to speak, and they're paying today's rates with very cheap dollars back then, or they are getting today's service at 5 years ago rates, prices. So that's my committee report. So I guess we go now on to director comments. Mrs. Worsen, thank you.
Well, I'll just share with you that I saw a photo yesterday that a customer brought in from the Pomo that was in 1939, and it was an aerial, and it showed distinctively the adobe clay side and the mesa sand, and there was hardly any eucalyptus trees. I guess maybe they weren't even planted, or they were just babies. Because you couldn't see much growth. Along the creek, there was a lot of green growth. But other than that, I'll have to bring it in. I should have brought it, but I forgot. So, but it was interesting, and it was only just a little tiny, tiny town. That's my comment.
Thank you, Mrs. Schwartz.
Thank you.
Mr. Wynn, would you like to start us off?
Sure. Water Resources Advisory Council will meet on the first Wednesday in August. It'll be on the 3rd. And we'll be talking about the Prop 50 monies, which will be of some interest to our district. We're listed 3rd of 4 projects that are integrated into one submission to the state. And We have worked through a lot of the preliminary applications. Staff did incredible work in a very short time, and I'm very hopeful. Second, that'll be on Wednesday the 3rd from 1:30 to 3 at the usual place, San Luis Obispo Library. This coming Monday, the 18th, the Napomo Water Planning Forum will meet. It hasn't met for a couple years now, but I called another meeting. That's a product of the REC, and that'll meet from 6:30 to 8 on Monday evening, and it's just an informational sit-rep. There's been so many things happen in water since this group met, and it met faithfully, and 40 or 50 people met every month for several years. And so they're just getting together to find out where we are. And I would be very happy to have a report from your committee, for example, on where we are with the pipeline, if that's something you want to comment on. There's other issues that we can bring them up to date on. But that'll be this coming Monday. I did say briefly earlier, and I'll repeat it during my comments, that we do, I think, have a sort of an overlapping of function in the two subcommittees, and I'm not, I just think it'd be simpler if the two of you went ahead and moved on, because subdivisions, annexations are strictly an issue with water and sewer, and so I think there's enough overlap that it might be more productive if just the two of you did it. We did have a useful couple of meetings, Ed and I and Mr. LeBrun, in terms of the general philosophy of annexing and whether it was to the benefit of the current ratepayers that we do that. But now we're getting into the specifics of groups that meet in Area 1, and I think that's already being covered. So just a suggestion.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Thank you, Mr. Wynn.
Oh, I'm not finished.
Oh, I know you're not finished.
I think we have, I hate to say it because staff has already pushed to the edge, but I think we have two extremely high priority issues that have to be dealt with within this month, or within the next 30 days. One, I think it's absolutely essential that the NCSD gives a measured response to the draft EIR for the Growth Management Ordinance. I know Ed said that he's reading through his, I'm looking through mine. There are any number of increases in water demand that are just buried in this without any comment. There's been no environmental analysis of water use in it, except just saying this is where the demand will go.
When is that one due?
Well, it started a 45-day period about a week ago Monday.
I believe it's August.
So it's coming up in the middle of next month.
Yeah, staff has to prepare a response to Craig.
But I think it's critical that we have a response to it, and frankly, we're going to find a lot to criticize. It's just the nature of the beast. It's a very, very large thing. At times it's only Mesa-wide, at other times it's county-wide, and it keeps sort of, you know, going in and out. So it you really end up having to read the whole thing, as far as I can tell. And that's what I'm doing. Multi-use zoning is being inserted into the planning set of standards without any EIR and without a general plan amendment. It's just being written in by adoption. And I, given what that does to water demand and sewer demand, I think it's really the wrong thing to do, and I think we have to hold our feet to the fire and make them do it right.
What do you suggest we do? What do you suggest we do there?
Well, I think we need to have a very we need to have a very detailed response to them, and it needs to have a summary sheet that sort of says these are the essential issues that we take exception to. It is a draft.
You're still talking about the EIR?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But see, that's where a lot of the multi-use is getting inserted.
Slipped in.
Yeah. Title 22. Then if those changes are made for the final, we may not find as much to quarrel about. But if they are going to do it, then I think nothing short of litigation will stop them. And obviously we want to stop short of that. The other one, which is also booming along, and although there's no date, the date they did have was a week ago last Friday. So, and that's the West TEF Corridor Design Plan, which also includes tremendous additions of density, doubles or trebles water use per acre in many of the situations. And this is a general plan amendment. And so because it's a general plan amendment, they must not be allowed to have a negative deck. They have to do a water, at least a focused analysis on water use. And it's not there. It's not any part of the design plan. So these are two. You got plenty on your plate already, Michael. I don't know how to apologize properly, but I just know that it has to be done. You've got willing workers on the board. I think all of us are willing to pitch in, but we can't let these things slide by. And that's the end of my comments.
Mr. Eby, director's comments? I noticed you have.
Well, one of them I already touched on, and that is I'm worried about mission creep on the supplemental water as to who the water is really for. Mm. And I think we need, before we get too much farther, we need to adopt a policy as to who we're going to be providing the supplemental water to. Who is it to benefit? And like I mentioned, I can see three levels of priority as to who should get it. The developers who are have properties that are outside the sphere of influence, that hasn't been on my threshold as to people who should get it, yet they're actively pursuing it right now. So before we go forward and promise things to people, I think we ought to establish a clear policy as to who we think our supplemental water is going to be for. We're only going to have one shot at it, I think. One shot across the river, and we're going to size that pipeline based on who we think it's for, and I think we need to have a clear idea rather than just have what I call this mission creep, which is how you get into trouble.
Can I just ask for clarification just real quick? You're not talking about the 3,000 acre feet that's in the judgment. You're talking about water beyond that 3,000 acre.
I'm talking about the water that comes in that pipeline project, whether it's 3,000 or 6,000 or 10,000. It's the supplemental water project which we have, which is covered by the current MOU with Santa Maria, which may be changed if we ask them for more water. It's the same project, but that supplemental water that comes from Santa Maria, I think we need a clear policy as to who that water is for.
Okay.
Who we're bringing that water up here for.
And if we're going to add more takers, if you will, at least set priorities, the pumping depressions are handled before.
Exactly. That's my concern. Yeah, I think we might be leapfrogging who we originally meant it for to provide it for other people.
I don't get a crystal clear feeling that the people understand that the 3,000 is to offset on current pumping. It's not for any other use. It's just to offset current pumping.
I just one quick comment.
I think 2,000 or more or less of that is to offset. But there's also an allocation in our 2,000 acre feet for build out within our boundaries. So I want to make sure that it's from our use of the water, there is a component in that 3,000 acre feet that will address future build out within the district boundaries. I say that right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm not ready at this point to ask for that to be an agenda item, but I probably will next time. And I'll get more formal about it and say what items I think we ought to be covered in this policy. But I think we're getting near the point where there's enough new things that are coming up that we really ought to talk about that and
have some general agreement.
The other thing, which is a more frivolous nature, is I'm selling tickets again for the Dana Adobe for a barbecue they're having on July 23rd at the Edwards Barn. $100 a ticket, that's for a couple. That entitles you to the barbecue, the evening's entertainment, and a chance to get 50% of it back or more. They're giving away, of the $100, they're going to give away $50. And so the opportunity for you to get your money back, make a tax-deductible donation up front, and get a taxable raffle winning at the back end. So I've got these tickets, and I've got to sell them by Friday. And I have four left, so if anybody is interested, see me after the meeting. That's all.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Eby. Director's comments, I make mine short. I don't have any. Thank you. So, Mr. Seitz, closed session.
Yes, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the audience, we do have three items listed on the agenda. One is the Santa Clara. All of these are existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9. One has to do with the Santa Maria groundwater litigation. The other one is Maria Vista versus the Napomo Community Service District. And the other one is the Napomo Community Service District versus the County of San Luis Obispo. And this is the Seven Station Land Use Ordinance and Environmental Impact Report.
Thank you very much, Mr. Seitz. I will now open it to public comment on any items on our closed session agenda. Seeing none, then we'll bring it back to the board and we will
adjourn
the closed session. Thank you. Would anybody like to take a short break before we officially adjourn the closed session?
Yes.
Okay. Let's say
11 to 3 items that are listed on the agenda. On each of the three items, the board did hear an update from legal counsel but took no reportable action.
Thank you very much, Mr. Seitz, members of the board. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Yeah, Nestor takes 500 acre feet.
You want to discuss that?
Personally?
Well, he's reserved.
Benham takes 500 acre feet, and somebody else takes some amount.
He doesn't have a project.
Who?
Benham.
Well, he says, I said, where is this project located? And he says, we're not disclosing that at this time. And I thought, well, is it in Barstow? Sending water out to Barstow?
Well, I know what his hopes are.
Say hi to Richard.
Excellent. But he doesn't own it.
Well, he's planning on retaining ownership of the pipeline.
Yeah.
He said,
I'm sure.